I'd like to introduce the first poet tonight, Charles Gunther, who's a translator, critic, and poet. His reviews often appear in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. In 1979, he was the co-winner of the Poetry Society of America's Witter-Briner translation grant. His translations and poetry have appeared in probably about 300, 400 small magazines. He's been writing for many, many years, and I think that you're going to enjoy his reading tonight. Charles Gunther.
We're supposed to have some new material, but I trust that just about everything I have here will be new, not having been read. Some of it's a little bit old, but I'll start out with a new poem called World of Fun. Has anybody heard of the Johnson Smith Company? Well, maybe a few people have. It's still around, but when I was a boy of about 8 or 9 or 10, it used to be a great company. The only difference between the Johnson Smith Company, a good old American name, and any carnival supply house is that Johnson Smith catalogs and articulates its absurdities. And the catalog we would write on a penny postcard, now I'm dating myself, please send your catalog, inch thick catalog of all kinds of novelties and so forth. And I remember a few little items that I would buy, something called a Seebacoscope, which had only a little mirror in it, or something that you could see see through your friends, and it was crosshairs in it. That was all, I think, you know, like a, thank goodness it wasn't it wasn't radiation in there, but anyway, it's a kind of hokey poem, and I found out that the Johnson Smith Company is now located in Michigan, not in Racine, Wisconsin, and they still issue a catalog, and I wrote for one of them, and I've gotten a couple of them so far, and it's a much thinner catalog, but it's been updated a little bit. For instance, they use the word electronic has been introduced in it. They still have some of the old things. I don't know if they have the joy buzzers or the exploding cigars, but it's a kind of a bit of wonderment for children. Of course, the sophisticated families with the prodigies, and I was not a prodigy, would scorn such stuff because obviously, kids who are raised on different environment don't go for such things. But this is a world of fun. Everything's possible from the Johnson Smith catalog. Everything's made easy with the electronic lie and love detector. The police handcuffs you can snap over the Hercules wristband and escape, if you wish, by the secrets of 15 baffling tricks revealed in the 24-page book. The cane will dance for you. The key will bend. The skeleton glow. The handkerchief burn with the secret thumb. Do the waterfall shuffle with the electric deck. Tell all with the deluxe fortune-telling predict-a-board. Get smart, learn while you sleep, develop a winning personality, overcome your enemies and hidden fears with the 7 keys to power used by ancient priests, kings, and mystics. Money-back guarantee. For $150, you can buy a gorilla suit and cause howls of laughter with a gory mask and cause howls of laughter. Big ear and super phones and the pocket electronic blackjack computer, split, stand, draw, and automatic bust, or do some impossible thing with a pocket miracle scientific walking spring, nothing to wind, walks lifelike in your hands. Fun from the sun, miniature solar cells, a sun-powered beanie from your plastic hat, 104 easy gadgets you can build, Last Supper tablecloths, the deluxe bottle cutter, the pocket metal detector and money finder will make you rich, 3,000 colorful Indian beads, silver enamel, liquid gold. Turn light into current, virtually unlimited life, no batteries needed, unlimited life. I've been working on a series of sort of experimental poems. It's really rough to do a poem out of an idea. And this is essentially what I've been doing in definitions of love. You know, there's a great deal. I've been fascinated by a book on the kind of anatomy of love, or definitions of many kinds of love, by the French philosopher Roland Barthes, or Barthes, if you want. And he has about 75 definitions, and I've been trying to poetize these and reduce his definitions and essays. Well, they're not definitions. It's reduce perhaps many pages of essays into a 3 or 4 line poem, or perhaps in other forms, in sonnets, estinas, or free verse, whatever. I have a few here. One is called Fetishes. And this is a definition of a kiss. This book, this pen, present or absent, the object becomes the self. All sensuous worlds devoid of the body die like scattered rain. On the western rim of the white cliff, long shadows on fallen mulberries. This is a little bit more philosophical, and I'll try to get into something a little lighter. But just as a few samples of these, he and she are absent. Only we, you and I, are here. We are named. You aren't she, but you, never anything else. Others will speak of you against my wishes, but what others say of you will not be you. A stranger told me something about you I didn't know. I bent an ear, pretending to be indifferent, impervious to gossip, but the shallow secret struck me like a blade. Why didn't you tell me? It's a commonplace thing. Did you think I knew? Did you care if I knew? These questions may never be answered, and the fragment of fact lie forever heavy between us. Oh, here's one on lassitude. The satyr sees a sleeping face and hurls on it immediately. Relieved, he need no longer chase the nymph to catch her. As for me, I revel in the eglantine, and then this is a crazy 3-line quotation from Barthes. Your color bursts with many a thorn. Bring back my heart with your cool wine. Make me a blanket of the morning. My skin breaks out a subtle flash on seeing you. My silent tongue thickens. I'm blind. Such signs all clash and ridicule what I have sung. To the object from the narcissistic libido, double desire for me and you is only this, absence in presence, gentle fire. I don't think you want to hear the end of the world. Have a little poem here on I, as a boy, also I learned to ride and spin a lariat and play guitar and a few things. I can't do any of these very proficiently now, but a man named Al Lewis, not the comedian, who was last in New Mexico. As a boy, he was in Buffalo Bill and Pawnee Bill's circus in the around World War I, and he would be perhaps in his late 70s right now. He was about 14. He ran away from home, and he taught me to, you know. But this is titled Little Sorrel. I'll never forget when I cut him out of the string, bridled him in the corral, led him out to the rig, dropped the saddle, wrapped the cinch ring on his belly, gentle old cow horse, wooled him around a bit, gave him a few light kicks in the paunch, then swung aboard. Well reined, he could turn on a dime, and we range branded all morning, and he didn't roll an eye. So I took him in to water him and leaned to slap his neck when he watched me like a hawk. Kinky old plug. He snuffed and suddenly dropped an ear, crow-hopped, humped, and pitched. I pulled all the leather I could, but we broke in two, and I dragged him back to camp with dirty hands. This is a piece called Good Neighbor. We know, we see people many times, and we don't even know their names, people who live in our neighborhood. And I happened to find a neighbor in his car, dead one morning last year, and this, a very strange circumstance, and he had been in his car since 3 o'clock the previous afternoon, and I had seen his car parked there. His wife, when the police accosted him, or when the police asked her, said, yes, we saw him yesterday afternoon, and apparently they didn't even go down, she didn't even go down to see where he was, and it's a strange circumstance. I don't want to point accusing fingers at anyone. There might have been circumstances beyond my knowledge, but I happened to find him. And, of course, this is all true. The only time I spoke to Albert Walker, he was slumped in his car with a crumpled $10 bill between his legs. Apparently, the postman told me he had gone out and sold digital watches and had been counting his money. His chin was on his chest, arms at his side, eyes closed, and I knew right away he was sleeping. But I knocked on the closed window. Are you all right? But he didn't answer. And then I saw the beer cans on the floor behind the seat, and I knew he had passed out. I ran in the house and called the police 3 times in 10 minutes. I called the police and asked for an ambulance. When the police came, I gave them a coat hanger to open the door, and it took 10 minutes to open the locked door, and the fumes rushed out. It was a hot morning. They shook his body, and it was stiff, and I knew he had been dead since yesterday afternoon. In plain sight on a busy boulevard, counting his day's receipts. There might have been more to all this than the curious neighbors knew, magnetized in a horde around the 5 police cars, the van, the ambulance, and the hearse. As the mailman said the next day, it might have been worse, he might have suffered. But why was he there on the passenger's side, sealed in, so hot and still? The only time I spoke to Albert Walker, he was slumped in his car with a crumpled $10 bill. Here's another rather light piece. I don't know, I hope. This is an instant sonnet, and it comes, in fact, it traces its ancestry back to the Renaissance Spanish. A colleague, originally the colleague was Harry Cargas, and I didn't, but I'll let you in on that secret. Harry Cargas' name was in here. A colleague sent an order for a sonnet. Lucky devil, you say. Poor angel is more like it. But I've put three lines on it. Not only that, I've contrived a rhyme for orange. The secret's in doing the words one by one, making it line by line, stave by stave, and before you know it, it's already half done. Add another line, and you've finished the octave. Enter the sestet with more confidence, and now we've only four more lines to go. Mold it spare, unpadded, give it sense, then drain the couplet as honey poured slowly from a cup, its substance long extended, for suddenly this living exercise is ended. Okay. I like the lady in the yellow coatie. I have two cats and a dog. I found just recently that my calico long haired is not a calico. In England, she's a tortoise white, and tortoiseshell, tortoise white. This one, I have two poems on cats, so I may as well read both of them. One is from the French of Paul Verlaine, and the other is from Baudelaire. And my translations aren't certainly any better than most translators. I think every particular translation translator can excel in one particular poem or as a translator. Among our translators, Peter Simpson's poem from Tibor Tolas on the bend in the river Danube, I think, is about, well, one of the best translations I've ever read, and perhaps the best in the book, The Hungarian Poems from the Hungarian Revolution, edited by David Ray. But I understand Peter didn't bring that poem, so it'll whet your appetite for another reading with him some night. This is on a lady and cat. She was playing with her cat, and oh, it was a marvelous sight. The white hand and the white paw pat and frolic in the evening light. Beneath her mittens of black thread, the lady, little rogue, was seen reaching with agate nails, deadly razor bright and razor keen. While the other, playing prim and sweet, drew in his steely claws discreet. But the devil was in their deadly game, for in the bedroom where the tone of very laughter rang, there shone four phosphorescent points of flame. The cats from Baudelaire. Scholars and ardent lovers, when they grow old, admire the strong and gentle cat, for he, like them, enjoys the indoors and similarly is sedentary and sensitive to the cold. A friend of learning with a sensual side, the cat seeks silence and the darkness spell. He'd be the ideal funeral horse of hell if such a task did not demean his pride. Musing, he takes the noble attitude of some great desert sphinx in solitude, stretched out and slumbering in an endless dream. His fertile loins have sparks of sorceries, and bits of gold as fine as gold dust seem galaxies drifting in his mystic eyes.